Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills. Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551, wash your hands, is our text number. Joe at rt.ie, 24/7, 365 from anywhere in the world, in 1850 715 815. Obviously a very distressing day yesterday in terms of the numbers of people who died from COVID-19. Gary is on the line. Gary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. And how are you? First of all, condolences. Your dad died yesterday.
He did, yes. Yeah, he died in hospital, yes.
And do you know what he died from at this stage?
Not exactly, no. So he was brought in on Tuesday evening, late Tuesday evening, into hospital. He had an underlying condition.
Okay.
But he also had great difficulty breathing over the last probably 7 or 8 days that he's alive. Okay. And when he came in, he was automatically tested then for COVID-19.
Right.
And they also carried out an X-ray, which might indicate also that it's likely he might have it.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still waiting on the test results to come back. So I think it played out over the last few days that he was taken in on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
On Wednesday morning, I asked, you know, we knew it wouldn't last long. We did have it, and I asked on Wednesday when would we get a result back.
Yeah.
And they thought it would be Thursday morning. And then Thursday morning, I asked just after he passed away how long it would be, and they indicated that it might be Saturday.
So you don't know yet what your dad died from.
No, that's the challenge. Yeah.
So he's not in yesterday's statistics for a start.
Correct.
But on Monday, did you think your dad was grievously ill?
He certainly deteriorated very quickly over the weekend, and he wasn't one of these characters that wants to go to hospital very easily. He probably hasn't been sick for much of his life, bar when he got sick in the last couple of years. And he wasn't one for going to hospital easy. So because we were self-isolating, he lives with just himself and my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't very, very evident to us, bar when we spoke to him on the phone, that he was definitely getting shorter and shorter of breath each day.
Yeah.
But that was something that was probably also happening, Joe, over the last number of months as well.
And were you allowed in to see your dad in his final hours?
So on Tuesday evening when we got there, we had the choice to maybe to try and save him to a ventilator, but they felt it was an underlying condition that would put him in a very long recovery, and it's not something he wanted. So we made a decision at that point that we would let him pass peacefully over the next whatever they thought at that point would be hours. We had to make a decision very quickly, first of all, in that case, which we didn't. And secondly, then only one of us could go in.
Yeah.
So I went in and I spent some time with him on Tuesday evening, Wednesday and Thursday morning.
Oh, there was only one person that I would go in total?
In total, yeah.
Oh, not at a time, but in total.
No. It's just to reduce the risk.
And yeah, of course.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But it was only you're gowned up and you're, but only one person can go in. Yes.
And were you able to talk to him before he died, Gary?
Well, he was probably mostly unconscious, but he certainly, on Tuesday night, he was... I'd say he was aware I was there, and the staff were fantastic.
Okay.
I mean, they certainly helped me understand that he was definitely able to hear me.
Okay.
And we used the phone then for people then to say what you need to say to him on that night. As well.
Okay. And had you, as a family with him, been talking about COVID-19? Given that over the last,
absolutely. We were all very aware of it. We'd all kept our distance. Self-isolated, and my mom was very clear in the house. Well, that she wanted to keep her distance. She kept her distance from him, even though she was close with him in the house. And she was obviously staying in the same room as him up to a point until he got really ill last week. But the issue, Joe, is that we know he was in contact with somebody this day 2 weeks ago that has since tested positive for the COVID-19. Their doctor then put both of them on a waiting list to be tested, which was last Wednesday. So there's two really challenges I have at the moment. Is one is that my mum then got a message last night, a text message to say that she wasn't going to be tested, and no way of sort of going back to say to understand why that was. Hmm. And secondly, then we're still unclear when we're going to get the results for my dad. So that means we cannot move on at this point.
Yeah.
We can't make funeral arrangements.
Because where are your dad's remains at the moment?
They're in the hospital at the moment, and they'll stay there until the result comes back.
And they won't release them beforehand, obviously.
No, we've asked that. Even though we said, and his wishes were, and it's great that we spoke about this recently, he's clear he wants to be cremated, and we're okay with that.
Okay.
And either way, now he'd be cremated, and he has to be if he comes back as positive anyway. But the mortuary are saying they will not release him until he either gets a positive or negative result back. It doesn't make much difference to us in relation. We know what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's about just holding, not knowing when that's going to happen. And when I went to try and find out, could anybody give me an indication or clarity as to how we get that result back and when it comes back, nobody seems to be able to do that. So there seems to be, I'm not sure, maybe I'm just unaware of how to get the information, but it's seriously lacking. The nurse couldn't tell me, our own doctor couldn't tell me, and then I rang the public health line and they couldn't clarify. They just seemed to say that you'll get the result back when it comes back through whatever channel it gets back to, either the mortuary or the department where he went into in the hospital, and they will then... They might have to ring me. But in the meantime, we're just waiting.
And is your mother home alone?
No, we're trying to keep our distance. We're trying to minimise the people.
Given the awful time that it is in terms of her losing her husband.
Yeah. So we're taking in turns to spend some time with her and keep our distance in the house. And again, it would have been certainly beneficial if she could have had a test to see where she stood. Again, the test was put in last Wednesday, and then she only got notified last night that she wouldn't be tested.
She's not symptomatic.
She doesn't seem to be. No, she was a little bit unwell during the week, but she seems to be in good health now at the moment.
Okay.
But we just need to keep an eye on her for the next couple of days as well to make sure she's okay.
Stay with us, Gary. Kathy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
When did your mother die, Kathy?
My mother died the early hours of Saturday morning.
Okay, and what happened?
She'd had a fall.
Mm-hmm.
And she was 95 and she had to have hip surgery.
Okay.
And she survived all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then she died in the early hours of the morning. She had a heart attack and she died.
Okay.
And the woman had battled double pneumonia and a vomiting bug 5 weeks previous.
Wow.
So she'd been through hell and survived. And it was so sad that she had to go the way she did. She was a fighter, Joe. She wasn't ready to go. She had a lot to do, even at 95 years of age. She was still making plans, you know.
And, of course, the funeral then was affected.
Oh, it was horrendous. We were very well looked after by Graham Glazer and Tralee County Kerry. I mean, his team and he was amazing to us, explained to us the difficulties we would have and that they would have on our behalf, because...
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't put the date of the funeral, they couldn't put the removal, they couldn't put anything on the paper. So what they did was they said, look, we'll leave it up to you. You can have up to 50 to 100 people, and if you want to let them out privately, that would be fine. Yeah. But all my mother's age group, they couldn't come. Their children couldn't come because they'd be my age, they're 60.
Yeah.
So we were left with family only, and that was okay, that was fine. But, you know, the sad thing was my mother had left specific instructions. I mean, she was meticulous. Down to six men shouldering her up the aisle. We didn't have six men, Joe.
Yeah.
We didn't have six men. So we trolleyed her up. I pushed her with my daughters and my nieces and my nephew. And we pushed her up. And, you know, halfway up the aisle, and you heard the door close behind you.
In the church.
That's the bit. That was it. I've never seen a door closed in the church from the inside. I was just, that's when it hit me. This is a terrible time. And she, you know, what can I do, you know?
And so her generation didn't attend the funeral?
No, no. I think I was the oldest there, Joe. And that was the sad part, because my mum had been born in Tralee and moved away for a number of years, lived here in Dublin in Dundrum with my dad. And then when they retired, they moved back down to Tralee. And they had lifelong friends and nobody could come and pay their respects. And they were brokenhearted. And even if they filed outside the church and they met us at a distance in the graveyard, but they were devastated and I couldn't even give them a hug. Do you know the way, I'm a I'm a huggy person, okay? So that's my fault if there is one. And I couldn't express my sympathy to them for their loss, because I live here in Dunshaughlin and my mother lives in Tralee, and all her friends were family to her because they were on her doorstep. I wasn't. And I couldn't express my love and appreciation for what they did for her, you know?
And you mentioned that your mother had left, what did you say, she was meticulous, that she left
meticulous.
Six men to shoulder her up to you. Had she other plans as well?
Everything. Oh, she's had a plan for years, Joe.
And what were the other plans, can I ask?
Oh, my youngest brother would have been her executor if he had lived, and he passed away 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. And as I'm the eldest daughter, I wouldn't do it right. So she took it all out of my hands, and we went to the undertakers about 3 years ago, and she made all her plans with Graham. And
She went to the undertaker.
I brought her, and she went, made the appointment when I went down on the Saturday. She said, "We're going to see the undertaker." So we went into Graham. I'm sure I don't know if you'd ever met anyone like her before, and he was fascinated by her. She did everything bar choose the coffin. And I said to her, "Mom, you've come this far now. Why don't we just go choose the coffin?" "Oh, go way out of that. That's a terrible thing to ask me to do."
In an undertaker's of all places.
I know, but the one thing, she doesn't step too far, you know.
And did she pick readings for the mass?
Oh, everything was done.
And what had she planned for after her funeral?
Oh, yes, we were going to go to Ballingarry House, and we were to have quite a reception for all her friends and family. And Ballingarry House, God love it, has closed down because of the virus. So even the people that had travelled, our friends had travelled down for the day, and it's a 3.5 hour drive each way, so that was quite a drive. We couldn't even offer them a cup of tea. Yeah. So, you know, I want people to be aware that there's an awful cost to people being careless out there. Yeah. There is an awful cost.
And the graveside, which is such an important part of Irish funerals and obsequies, what was the graveside?
Horrendous. Everyone standing away from each other. No comfort given to anybody. No, it was just the coldest thing I'd ever seen.
And how many people were allowed to go?
Anyone who wanted to go could go, but you see, nobody knew, so nobody turned up, you know. And there was about 15 of us, all just family.
Yeah. And is that the reason, you say the undertaker didn't publicly announce it, it's deliberately to keep the numbers down
and protect health people, reasons. Yes. I think that's the standard. That's the health board regulation. I don't think he did this. These are the instructions he's been given, and he made it quite clear to us that, you know, to protect us and protect everybody else. So I couldn't argue with the man. He's absolutely right. Yeah. And but I just felt that 95 years of age, he deserved better, and we couldn't give it to him.
And when is her next birthday?
In August, she would be 96.
Would that not be an occasion, maybe? I don't know.
I don't think this virus is going to be gone then, Joe. Yeah. We'll be lucky this time next year for her first anniversary. We will give her her day. She will have her day. But it might be a year away, you know. Yeah. It's such a shame. When she had it all planned. You know, my mother was a woman for an occasion. She liked everything to be right. My nieces were saying that there was a table beside her coffin in the church, and it wasn't quite hanging correctly. And my niece said, "Your mother would have something to say about that now, can't you?" You know, she was meticulous, you know. Yeah. And yes, there was her big day, and nothing done the way she wanted it. It was so sad.
Let me go back to Gary. You're cast down as it is because your dad only died yesterday and you don't know what was the cause of his death. That description of what's ahead in terms of a funeral, regardless of whether it's COVID-19 or not, are you prepared for that?
Well, we certainly have discussed it, Joe, as our family. We're certainly not looking forward to it. I mean, my sister can't come home. She's abroad. My dad's sisters are abroad. They can't come home. So, and we've been told very clearly that maximum of 20 people, regardless of whether the result comes back as positive or negative for COVID-19.
Okay. That's a very, very difficult situation. And as I said, 10 people died yesterday. They're the official stats, and it's understandable that they're obviously, which surprise people, but that's not in a negative way, but that the figures might not be complete for any given day, because some people, even though they passed away, are awaiting the results of a test. Gary, I know you didn't want to use your dad's first name for privacy. I understand that, but please accept our condolences, and especially to your dear mother. And Cathy, to you as well.
Thank you.
Condolences. She sounded like an incredible woman, as did Gary's dad. And may both of them rest in peace, safe in the arms of Our Lady, Queen of Heaven. And look after each other for the foreseeable future. Gary, thanks again. And Cathy, thanks again.
Take care.
Thank you both. 51551, wash your hands, please.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie. Well, from the end of life to the beginning of life, I've Shane Broff on the line and Aveen Howe. Shane, good afternoon.
How are you doing, Joe?
I hope and will be a very happy time for you and your family. When is the baby due to be born, Shane?
Well, my partner is 38 weeks pregnant with her first child. She got gestational diabetes, so they are going to induce her before term. So we were under the illusion that that was going to be done yesterday. Now, obviously, we thought everything was going to be okay. Then COVID hit, and we were told that it was just the partners allowed in to the maternity ward and the labour.
Okay.
So brought her up yesterday to the hospital for her appointment, and I wasn't allowed into the hospital. At all?
Not into the building?
Not even into the building, no.
Wow.
And so about an hour later, I got a call from her, and she was upset, so I didn't know what was going on. She said she'd been informed that I wouldn't be allowed in when she was given birth, and that I might be allowed in to see the baby through a glass when it was born. So obviously she was very upset over this, it being her first child. I have kids from another relationship, and, you know, I've been at both their births, so it was something that I was looking forward to. But obviously with her being induced, the labour was going to be a lot harder, so I wanted to be there for her. But now, this morning, we got another call saying, no, I won't be allowed in at all. I have to drop her to the hospital Monday morning, and then I'll get a call when herself and the baby has been discharged.
And this is the first birth that you're... this is the first child your partner's having on Monday. And what was your reaction, Shane? Did you say...
I'm very angry about it, to be honest. Now, I tried getting answers from the hospital, but I couldn't get through.
And have other maternity hospitals... I know it's Mullingar. Have other maternity hospitals imposed the same restrictions?
Not to my knowledge. Even on RT there yesterday evening when we got home, we were just checking, and they specified the Midlands Hospital. So I assume that it is only Mullingar, but I don't know.
Well, we'll try and find out.
I understand that there, you know, there is a pandemic going on, and listen to your previous callers, you know, there, you know, it is serious. I understand that. But at the same time, our take on it is it's going to be myself, my partner, and obviously the midwife in the labour ward. And that's it, like, you know. There are things that could be done, including protective wear, you know. So I don't know.
Say with a Shane. Ian Howe has contacted us as well, 1850 715 815. Ian, is it Mullingar Hospital as well where your wife is due to have the baby?
Hi, Joe. Yes, it is Mullingar Hospital, yeah.
And how imminent is the arrival, please, God?
She's 38 weeks, same as that chap there.
Okay.
38 weeks. Now, Joe, I only found out yesterday evening through Facebook, actually.
Okay.
And that was the post that I got to say that the hospital weren't allowing the partners in into the hospital at all for the birth. So I don't think that's right at all, Joe, you know.
Even though the hospital is stating clearly the reason we're doing it is to stop the spread of COVID-19.
Yeah, I understand that, Joe, but I rang the Coombe and I have rang the Rotunda.
Okay.
Now, they're not implementing any sort of measures like that.
Okay.
No, they're saying what they're... Their position, what they're going to do is, as normal, the partner or the father, whoever it may be, mm-hmm. can go in, and once the mother has given birth and mother and child are okay and they're moved to a ward, then the father or the partner will be asked to leave until they're actually leaving the hospital themselves, you know what I mean? Until the mother's coming home, say, with the child.
And Ian, how did your wife react when she heard this news? That
she's in bits. She was in tears last night. And already, like I said, she's 38 weeks. So mm-hmm. at the minute, she could go at any time. And like, the way I look at it is, if she's in this much distress at the minute, like, you could imagine if she goes in there and she's there on her own with total strangers, given birth. I don't think it's right. Now, look, I understand what's going on. What I said, I've been in contact with the hospital in Mullingar myself, and I was chatting to the midwives, and they've said to me, they're totally against it.
Oh, are they?
Because, for one, it's hard enough for them when a woman is in labour and they're stressed out and panic and whatever. But that's with a partner there. Can you imagine when the partner's not going to be there? That's going to have a massive impact on them. How upset they're going to be, and the struggle for them to do it on their own. Mm. You know?
Will you be allowed into the hospital at any time to see your new child?
Not at all. They said literally, I'd be bringing her in, walk, and for whatever length of time she's in the labour ward, I won't be allowed in. The only time I would be allowed to see them is when they're actually leaving the hospital to come home.
And you go to collect or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, from my understanding of it, Joe, this hasn't been brought in by government. This is just management within Mullingar Hospital. So, how they can...
Maybe there are circumstances within the hospital that they're worried about.
Yeah, but I think for something like this, Joe, they could make some sort of an exception. Like, to be honest, if I had to go in there and wear a face suit and be covered up to the last, I wouldn't care. You know, just once I go in there and I go, my wife and my child are fine, and once all that is done, I would quite happily leave the hospital and not go back until they were leaving from home. You know what I mean? Like, I've been on to TDs there, and I've had family members getting in contact with TDs, and even to contact people within the dog. They have no inkling of what's going on here. This was the first day here.
But you're saying, Ian, You're saying, in effect, that if the government said, OK, maternity hospitals, no one present at the birth of the baby, you would uphold that, obviously.
Oh, exactly.
But you're saying it's because you've phoned other maternity hospitals, they said, no, they're not doing it.
Exactly. It's bigger hospitals that aren't doing that at all, which I don't understand. It's not as if Mullingar had a massive, you know, surge of this coronavirus. You know what I mean? There's nothing like that at the minute. Now, we understand staff and there, it's nothing to do with them. This is coming down from management. They're doing a brilliant job with the situation that's going on. But I think they could make some sort of an exception for the mother and, say, the father going in there. You know what I mean? Like, the mother's going to be stressed out enough without putting them through this trauma. Like, since we found out yesterday... Now, Joe,
continue. Since you found out yesterday.
Yeah, we found out yesterday through Facebook. The hospital themselves didn't even contact us. Because we're finding out this through social media. So therefore, as same as that chap that was on, like, he's actually going to the door and then he's being told, well, sorry, you can't come in, like. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that can't be on either. They have to make some sort of...
Is there any way around it? Is there any, given the world of technology these days, where you could be talking to your partner as she gives birth? I know.
It's not, but like, another thing for me, Joe, is like, I'm my wife's next of kin, okay? Mm. So if something went wrong while she's in labour, if what it didn't happen, but let's say something went wrong, who makes the call in there when her next of kin isn't even beside her? You know what I mean? I've emailed Simon Harris there last night. I sent him an email stating what's going on, and as far as I was concerned, government haven't brought this in. This is a HSD hospital, and the HSD...
Okay, well, that's maybe it'll be one of the questions asked of Tony Houlihan at the evening press conferences.
You know, I think
that's how COVID-19 is affecting your life now. Please God, everything will go well at the birth, and this time next week or 2 weeks. I know this time on Monday afternoon, Shane and his partner will have a new healthy child. Please God.
Yeah.
But the government might say, "Well, this is just one of the and we're sorry for it. This is just one of the inconveniences we have to endure."
Yeah, but why I'm looking at it, this isn't government that's actually doing this. You wouldn't mind, Joe. I know the situation that's going on, the whole world is affected here, which is, you know, terrible. But at the same time, the government haven't said anything about this. This is management within that hospital.
Yeah, okay, that point is well made. How, Ian and Shane, how are other parts of your life, this is a big one now, I know, but how are other parts of your life affected by COVID-19?
Well, at the minute, Joe, I'm out of work now, temporary laid off.
Okay.
Just obviously work slacking it down and stuff. And, like, myself and my wife, we're both in isolation the last 2 weeks. Just the fact of, you know, she's could go at any time and we don't want to be getting kind of infected, you know what I mean, or anything like that. We're trying to keep our distance. We haven't even seen our own families.
Right. And Shane, in your case?
Well, I'm still working, thank God, but we're trying to limit the amount of people that are around us or go to vacant properties. But I, as I said earlier, I have kids from another relationship, and only found out today that my son is going for testing on Tuesday. He's got an underlying blood condition, and he has a fever and a cough, so he's going. So I'm obviously worried about that too, you know?
Yeah, difficult time. On the one hand, it will be a joyous occasion, but unfortunately,
it's only Mullingar. To our knowledge, it's not implemented by the HSE. And on top of that, I understand that they're trying to curtail the amount of people coming in and out with COVID. But my partner was informed there's someone in maternity ward with COVID already.
Yes. Okay, and a reminder that the vast majority of people recover from. Okay, Shane and Ian, I hope Monday goes well, and
for
you, Shane and Ian, the next 2 weeks.
Thanks.
Well,
listen
to Carol for a sec. Carol Boylan, Carol's in Cork. Carol, you're listening to the two expectant fathers.
I am, Joe, and all I would say to them is just put your hands together and ask the Lord that there be safe delivery. If they have been delivered already and their wives and their babies are okay, that's absolutely wonderful. I'm of the generation that no fathers were in. I had six children. The last pregnancy, twins, was an emergency situation. And even at that, there was no question. My first two children born in England, we were in for 10 days. We were kept in for 10 days in those days. Now they're lucky if they're in 48 hours.
And Carol,
their family.
At any time, would you have preferred if your husband was there?
Do you know, of course I would have, Joe. It would have been lovely. But, like, I wasn't weeping or crying, and neither was he, that he couldn't be there. But, like, and I know in recent years with my grandchildren and everything that's been born, the fathers have been there, whether their sons or sons-in-law, they have been there with them. But this is exceptional times, Joe. This is really exceptional times.
Yeah.
And I think people must square their shoulders and just say, yeah, we have to put up with that for the moment, as well as everything else that we have to put up with. There has to be distancing. I'm not going in within a donkey's roar of the hospital. I'm leaving you at the door. Everything. And once I get the phone call that everything is well and you're well, they can look at each other on their phones, their iPhones, and they can, and she'd be home if
things aren't the way they are.
They can have their babies in their arms, and they will be home in a couple of days, and everything will be fine. And he'll probably be sorry she's home at that stage. Joe.
I know, I'm sure they won't. Well, so let's ask Shane and Ian. Shane, how do you react to Carol saying, and she's saying it in a nice way, but she's just saying awful emergency times.
Yes.
Shoulder to the wheel, but you don't have to have your shoulder in the maternity ward.
As Carol said there, and I understand, you know, only going back a generation ago, it wasn't norm for a partner to be in the maternity ward. But it's different times now, and like when you've got someone who's expecting their first child and they're being induced and they're just nervous, you know, they need that reassurance. They need someone with them there, you know.
Yes, I know. I remember that very, very well. Shane, is it? I remember that very, very well. And when Stephen was born, it was exactly the same. And I would have loved it if Paul could have been in with me. But it was, and I was induced, and it was very severe. And in for 10 days, and he was, and they rang the bell after that hour, and he was out the door, and nobody else, no other family member.
And what would you say directly to Shane and Ian?
I would say, be patient. Just be patient. With the whole nation is holding its breath. The whole nation has to be patient. And what was the norm? I do agree with you, Shane. It became the norm that all fathers were in, and that was wonderful. Even mothers could go in with them. There were multiples in the room, but the norm is now gone. The norm has been out the door and gone, and when this is all over, there'll be a new norm in everything in life, Joe. Everything will be changed. Do you know? So, like, don't cry for me, Argentina. That just pray that everything is right with your wife, and that she goes into labour, or if she has had the baby already, and she's probably having the baby blues if she had the baby a couple of days ago. But she'll be home soon, and you'll be able to hug her and look after her then.
Ian, what do you think of what Carol is saying?
Joe, I agree with Shane there a bit. It is different times now, and for me, myself and my wife, we've been in isolation for over 2 weeks now. So the chances of us having it are very slim. There's more chance of, say, a healthcare worker or something having it, member of staff within the hospital having it, you know what I mean? Rather than myself, my wife. Now, if my wife goes into labour, I'm the one that brings her into the hospital. You know what I mean? But which doesn't make sense then, they're saying, well, you can't come at the border. You know, I don't think that's right. It's that kind of defeating the purpose too. And I know for a fact, the two of us are in isolation for over 2 weeks. So I don't see why they can't just make an exception where...
Carol, do you want to...
Up to the last.
You see, Joe, being the hospital authorities, there can be no exceptions. And I know it's terribly hard. I lived through it being hard. I know exactly where they're coming from. I know exactly the heartache when Paul handed me over every time in England, twice, and to the Bon Secours in Cork here, and me crying with him going. I know how they feel, and my heart bleeds for them. But I'm asking them just to look at the situation and know every single thing in our life has changed and is going to change further. And people who think that they are safe, they may not be safe in a week's time. None of us know, Joe.
Yeah. Let me bring Emma Day. Emma, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Well, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
When was the baby born?
About an hour ago, I think, or just over an hour and a half ago.
God, you sound fine. You sound fantastic, Emma.
I do, because I've been so worried about my daughter because
you're the granny. You're the granny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And where is your daughter and granddaughter?
They're in University Hospital in Galway.
Okay, and you're on Inishbofin.
I am. I'm stuck out in Inishbofin. Yeah. Yeah.
And was your daughter? We talked about an hour ago. Was she allowed to have somebody with her?
No.
Okay.
The last appointment she went in for, she was told that about 2 weeks ago that there was no visitors allowed, and even the husbands weren't allowed attend.
Okay.
The birth.
And when was she? When was she admitted?
So last Tuesday, my daughter had to, because the baby was breech, so she was a high risk pregnancy. So she had to go down to Galway and stay in a little apartment attached to the hotel on her own till this morning. And she headed into the hospital on her own this morning and had her baby.
Okay. Has anyone been told?
Well done. God bless her.
Yeah. No, there's nobody out there with her, because obviously no visitors or anything like that. And her husband and her little girl are here on the island, so they won't see her till next week.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. But everything, like, I was so worried last night thinking about her, because I know she's a very strong person, but I know she was probably worried herself, you know, and it was affection. So, you know, that's the other side of it. It wasn't a natural birth. So I suppose all around everything going well, that the little girl is here now, thank God. And she's doing well. And she's, you know, that sadness is gone now, because her little bundle of joy is here now.
And did you get the weight of the child or the name of the
child? I don't know, because, well, the weight was 6 pounds, 15 ounces.
Right.
And I don't know the name, because her husband is Hawaiian. She married her husband in Colorado, where she lived for a couple of years.
Wow, great.
And they came back. So they have a little girl called Malia.
Malia.
Which means Mary in English. So I don't know this little girl's name there yet. So
That's brilliant.
It'll be an interesting one. But we're all on lockdown here, Joe, as well.
Yeah,
well,
many on Inish. Are you from the famous Day family on Inish Boffin that owned the hotel?
I married into one of the days, all right, yeah.
Now, is there not a doctor in the extended family over in Clare Galway?
Dr. Brendan would be indeed,
and he's a great doctor as well. I hear that from my friends.
Brilliant doctor.
So what's life on the island like now, Emma?
It's very quiet, very, you know, you're stuck in just looking out, you know. We're trying to help one of Aidan's, my husband's aunts, by just dropping some dinner over to her, because she's on her own, she's no family, and she'd live on the east side of the island. I actually made some hand sterilizer soap myself the other day, out of boredom, from tea tree oil. So I'll send you a bar, Joe, just to give it out to the old people, and just to keep myself busy, you know, because this time of year we'd be coming into our busy season. St. Patrick's would have been, some of the hotels getting ready to open, and Easter obviously coming up. Mm-hmm. And now we don't know what's going to happen, obviously, because we're on lockdown. But we've only 150 people here on the island, Joe, and some of them are very vulnerable. And if it does come in here, like, I mean, some of them people, you know, it could be quite dangerous, including myself. I have underlying conditions myself.
Oh, have you?
I just got over pancreatitis there, and I have a heart condition as well. So everybody has to be careful, you know. And even when my granddaughter comes home, I won't see her probably for 2 weeks. You know, just to give her a chance.
Okay.
And it's sad, because it's literally next door, you know.
Oh, they live right beside you?
They live right beside me, yeah. I'm originally from Dublin, Joe. I moved down here over 30 years ago, or 35 years ago. I moved down with my family, and I'm the only one left on the island. The rest of them didn't hack it. I stayed on.
What did you hear?
Originally from Darndale, yeah. I think Gay Burns on a programme years ago, he rang my mother of the day, we were moving down here to the island. Yeah.
And how did you end up marrying somebody from Inish Boffin, so to speak?
Oh, that's a very long story. It's very complicated. You want a whole new lifeline for my chapter, Joe. Honestly.
Stay with us, Emma, because I want to let Sharon speak to Ian. I don't know if Ian is still there, but Shane, I know, is still there. Sharon, your point, please, listening to Ian and Shane, who... because Mullingar Maternity Hospital have decided, or Maternity Wing in Mullingar Hospital decided, that there's no partners allowed in the delivery room, or indeed in the hospital, full stop. Sharon, your point, please.
Good afternoon, Joe, and congratulations to Anna there. I've very fond memories of Inish Boffin from my years
in
Galway. I suppose I'm a bit cross, Joe, listening. Mm-hmm. I didn't hear Shane, but I'm listening to Ian. I'm a healthcare worker. I'm not on the very front line, but I'm in a position where I would have an underlying condition myself, and I'm out there working every day, strictly following all HSE guidelines, and all of us incredibly pulling together as one nation. So I suppose Ian is making me cross, because I think he's been very selfish in this. If the hospital have put those precautions, they've done it for a reason. Correct. And he should absolutely respect those reasons. He is not the only person who is suffering when you think of all our wonderful people who are dying alone.
Yeah.
His wife is well able to go on and have a child. He certainly should not be pressurising our TDs. And I can't believe that he tried to call Simon Harris when Simon Harris is doing such incredible work for us. He needs to be mature about this. He needs to step back and he needs to pull together like all the rest of us are doing.
Yeah, correct.
Okay, Ian or Shane, do you want to reply to Sharon?
Yeah, Joe, well, I got a bill there, Joe.
Ian, who's that,
Joe?
Ian?
Yeah, it is Ian, yeah. Joe, to me, the healthcare workers in this country are doing a phenomenal job. You know, like, this is nothing against the healthcare workers by any means, right? What I'm saying to you is...
No, but Ian, let's be clear. What Sharon is saying and what Carol is saying, and I'm paraphrasing this very badly, but they're saying to both of you, and there's no attempt here at being uncaring at this wonderful time of your lives, but what they're saying is get a grip.
Correct, Joe. Thank you.
Yeah, very much so.
Is that unkind, Ian or Shane? Do you feel that's...
Well, Joe, the way I look at it, what if something happens when herself is in there in labour?
Yeah, but she will be there with the medics. You're not a medic.
She will be there with the experts.
Yeah.
Yeah, but who's her next of kin if God forbid, something went wrong?
Who's the old person's next of kin who's been isolated for 3 or 4 weeks, then in hospital and dies alone?
There can't be an exception.
There cannot be exception for one person. We all have to pull together. If there's one exception, then there's everyone else looking for an exception.
Yes.
Okay, I hope... I just wonder, can technology help? I know it's not the same, Ian or Shane,
Absolutely. But
I wonder, can technology help over the next few days? Because they are very... on the one hand, a wonderful, wonderful occasion coming up. On the other hand, there's nothing, as we discovered earlier, death is affected by this, death is caused by this, but death is also of people who... funerals of people who died from other issues are affected by this, birth is affected by this, and everything in between, as Carol would say. Okay, Ian...
Joe, may I say something?
Carol,
to those young men, if this is their first babies, with God's good grace, they will have a second child, and everything in the world will be so much better, and they will be there then.
Okay.
And they might be like so many fathers, and they'll hit the ground.
Okay, I'm sure they will. Okay. Well, they're good. They sound like they're great fathers.
They really are.
They are, but they haven't been through it. Okay, lads. Thanks, Ian. Thanks, Shane.
Joe.
Carol Boiling, Sharon as well, and Emma on Inish Boffin. Emma Day, congratulations. An hour ago, her daughter had a daughter in Galway Hospital. So that's the population of Inish Boffin has just risen to 151, which reminds me, 51551, wash your hands.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by bonkers.ie. Compare energy prices across a range of suppliers this March. See how much time and money you could save with bonkers.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Let me bring in Father Martin Keogh from Waterford. Martin, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. I was just listening to just the callers at the beginning.
Yeah, about the funerals.
The funerals, yeah. And, just listen to them. Obviously, first of all, I'd like to offer my condolences to them. But you're, of course, dealing with emotions and loss, and no one wants to be in the situation that we're in today. But just as I was listening to the people, I would be hopeful that when this is over and done with, and please God, it won't be too long, that the celebrations that people wanted to have of their loved ones, they're like even the wishes that people wanted, they can have them. I mean, we don't bury a person twice, but they can, that mass, the funeral mass, even prayers at the grave, there's no reason why, you know, what their wishes can't be.
At funerals in your diocese, Father Martin, what has been the numbers who are allowed to attend?
Well, it's family and close friends, but we're trying to, again, it's just keeping with the HSC guidelines, the best practice.
Yeah.
So, obviously, I suppose that, like, I mean, as you mentioned already, like, Irish funerals are such a part of the Irish psyche.
Our lives, in that sense.
Our lives.
Yeah.
But, like, when I was thinking about it, like, if you had a family that were sitting in the front seat and people filing past them. And
Well, totally understandable,
To be fair to the family as well.
Course,
I mean,
of course.
That's the difficulty. That's probably one of the main difficulties, and that everybody just wants to throw their arms around. And
it is throwing into relief.
Yeah.
And highlighting the fact of all the wonderful things in life that we took for granted. Hopefully they will be back. Our sense of community, that whole idea of funerals and filing to offer your condolences. So many things have changed. Say with us, Father Martin, because you might have something to say to our next caller. Olive, good afternoon.
Hiya, Joe.
How are you? What's your situation, Olive, your sister?
Yeah, Joe, my sister is in the hospice in Harrowscroft.
Okay.
She's dying of cancer. Sorry, I'm just a bit upset.
Take your time.
She, there's only been one visitor allowed for over a week per day, and it was from 11 to 1 and 5 to 7. And from today, it's only from 11 to 1.
Right.
And she's on the morphine pump and everything.
And when is the last time you saw her, Olive?
I saw her last Friday. Thursday
week.
Last.
Okay.
Yeah, over a week. Now, hopefully I'll get into her on Monday because she has four grown-up children and her husband, so it's only per day. So I have to kind of let them go before me. But,
and were you able to talk to her last Thursday?
She sleeps a lot and she's deteriorated since last weekend. She stopped eating and she's been put on the morphine pump and she's sleeping a lot. And they said she's getting very anxious. They did have her on something, but she's more anxious now for the time that she's awake. And I just think it's terrible that when she does wake up, you know, and if there's nobody there, she's in a ward on her own.
Yeah. And your point is, in the current emergency, if there's 2 hours where there will be someone there, but there's 22 every day when there will not be anyone there.
Yeah, and like we're thinking, like, what happens when the time comes if there's only one person allowed there and when she goes?
Yeah.
And
what,
like,
what age is your sister, Olive?
She's 65, Joe.
Oh, that's very young.
Mm. She has cancer in her lungs and gone to her brain. And yeah, it's just heartbreaking that you can't get in to see. And it's for her. I'm just thinking of, you know, that what's going through her mind. You know, that when she's, I mean, the nurses are brilliant.
Yeah, of course.
They're angels.
The hospice movement.
And,
yeah.
You know, she has a little pad there that she presses when she needs them and they come down straight away, but they're not there all the time. And I was just, I know they can't have to keep people out of the hospital, but. Mm-hmm. Even if, I know it sounds a bit silly, but even if they could let us look through the window, she's like, you know, and there's like a garden outside where she is.
Oh, is there? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so it's just awful, Joe.
I just wonder, are you regulating people coming onto the grounds of Harrowscroft Hospice?
Well, they probably are, Joe.
Yeah.
You know, it's
an awful time on so many levels, isn't it, Olive? It really is.
Yeah, it's just horrible. Can't stop thinking about her there, and you know, when she wakes up and there's nobody there. And
you said Fran has four children.
Yeah, she's four grown-up children. Yeah.
So there's partners there. So that's eight. And then is her husband still alive?
Yes, her husband's still alive. And like he said, like he was telling me yesterday that, you know, he said to the nurse, like, you know, can we not go in more? He understands the situation, and he said, like, she's my wife. I want to be there holding her hand.
But she hasn't been diagnosed with COVID-19. But what would the hospital say is, how do we know people coming in to visit?
I understand that, Joe. It's just, I mean, I'm not the only person in this situation.
Say listening, Olive, for a sec. And hopefully nurses and that in the hospice will hear you on, Olive, and will be able to whisper to Fran that your family are so loving and caring. They've even gone on the national radio to say how much they love you and how much they're in distress over the fact that they can't even hold your hand. But maybe that's a little message that can go in. Stay with us, Olive. Paddy, your situation, Paddy.
Hi, Joe. It's something similar to your previous caller. My wife, Mary, is undergoing cancer treatment at the minute, and she's very, very seriously ill. And we haven't been able to see her since the 15th of March. She's been in for 3 weeks in total on this occasion. And the first week, I could get in for 10 minutes at a time to talk to her and hold her hand. But then the following week, I was asked by the staff if I had a chill or if I had a headache, and I said I had a bit of a one, and they said, well, we need you to have a test before we let you in. So it took 6 days before the test happened last Sunday, and this is Friday, and we're still waiting for the results.
So your wife is seriously ill?
She is, yeah.
And it's 2 days before St. Patrick's Day that anyone was allowed in to see her?
Yes, absolutely, anyone, yeah. We have two daughters, so none of the three of us have been. We've been in effective isolation here since that time, waiting for, and the result still hasn't appeared. So every time I contact the hospital, they say, "Did you get the result?" I said, "No, well, you can't." And poor Mary is so distressed. And
is there any other form of direct communication possible with her?
Well, there is. I mean, I'm on the phone to her, and we've had one or two WhatsApp video calls.
And how is she coping with the fact that?
She's very distraught, just like we are. Because we just need to see her, and because she's so unwell, it would be so important for us to comfort her and be able to hold her. And it's tough.
And how is she doing physically? Is she strong in herself at the moment?
No, she's very weak, because she hasn't been able to eat. She gets sick quite a lot. Anything she eats, she vomits, unfortunately. Yeah. And so now she's been fed through a tube, and so it's quite serious. And
how long are you waiting on the results of the test?
Well, we had the test last Sunday.
So 6 days. Five days.
Yeah. And that's the first question.
Hopefully that comes through in the next few days, and that is negative.
Okay, well, listen, thanks for highlighting it, Joe.
Okay, I hope your wife, I hope she can listen to the radio, and if she can engage on WhatsApp, and I hope she hears the love in your voice, Paddy. Kind regards at this very, very difficult time. Olive, kind regards to you. And I think your wife's name is Mary. Is that right, Paddy? Is your wife's name?
Yes, Mary. Yeah.
Kind regards to Mary. Olive, and kind regards to you and Fran and her family at this difficult time. Yes, our Father Martin.
Yeah. So I was actually talking to a friend of mine today who's a nurse, and I mean, obviously the last thing that, like, any nurse or anybody wants to stop family from coming to nursing homes or hospitals. You know, these are abnormal times, biggest fear, I think one of the biggest fears, as you know, is that they're afraid that if something gets into the nursing home, that it will spread so rapidly.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest fear. And I think not just that they're afraid they lose staff because of this quarantine. And I said, no, I'm mindful of the fact you're dealing with emotions. I know if it was my family, your family, I'd want to get in, and I'd want to be with my father or my mother.
Of course,
you know, but it's just that's the big fear of the staff and the hospitals and homes. That they're, you know, it's their genuine fear that if it got into the home and trying to keep it out, so as I said, it's abnormal times. Like, there's nothing normal about it. You know, there's nothing.
And Father Martin, do you when people ring you or contact you, do you in your faith have a for your followers or for the followers of Christ, do you have a prayer that you refer them to reading? Or?
Well, the thing about it is that I hope what we're able to do at the moment is that even though we say public mass, we're saying private mass, and we've been able to use the medium of we say Facebook
and webcam,
for reflections and prayers and.
Okay.
we've been able to go to churches ourselves and put up posts.
Is there any reflection? Think about it for a second. Is there any reflection that's resonated with you and your faith that you might think is appropriate? I'll come back to you in a sec. I just want to bring in Peter. Peter, good afternoon. Yeah.
Hello, Joe. We had a private funeral early in the week.
Okay.
10 of us, 10 family members, on our own in the funeral home and on our own in the big church. And it was absolutely horrendous.
Yeah.
It was an elderly man. He had come to the natural end of his life. But all of our friends and family were unable to come. It was, people who are facing this, I think, it's hard enough, but it's going to be harder. And we went back out to the house then for refreshments, and we formed a circle in the front and put a table and sandwiches and tea in the middle and kept our distances. And it was probably, all of us were able to talk to one another, which you mightn't be able to do inside the house, that bunches break up. But we were spread over 5 pews in the church. It was, my wife is a nurse, my sister-in-law is a doctor, and we don't want either of them to get sick
because
they're doing important jobs. Yeah. And my final thing was about the two lads and their wives in maternity hospital. The hospitals have to take care of everybody in the hospital, be it staff and all the other mothers, expectant mothers. And look at, I was at the birth of both of my children, and I wasn't a whole heap of good at it. But I was there.
Your wife appreciated you being there, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Once the mother and the child are well, that's what they need to think about.
Okay, Father Martin, I know you, and condolences on the death of your relative, Peter, and may he rest in peace. Father Martin, I know
you're off jokes. I'll talk.
Your PP, good morning, Peter. Your PP in Kilmacthomas in County Waterford. Do you want to finish this segment before I go into an ad break with any words of reflection at this awful time?
I suppose as Christian people, we're people of the resurrection. We come into the world alone, and it's might seem, well, we leave the world, but we leave that we're people of faith and hope. We believe that we'll be reunited again with family and friends, and that's the comfort for faith, that there's a place prepared for each of us. And we can celebrate people's life, we keep them alive in our hearts. They're always with us, they're never far from us.
Yeah.
And I think, and you know, that's what sustains us, that people are gone from this life, gone to a new life, but they're with us always. And that's what I believe anyway, Joe.
Okay, well said. And thanks. That's Father Martin Keogh. And thanks to all our callers. 51551, wash your hands. Back after this.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Amanda, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
Take your time. And you just want to reiterate the seriousness of this, because is it 3 members of your family?
Yes, 3 members of my extended family are in ICU with COVID-19.
Yeah.
And I suppose the reality for anyone in that situation is you won't be able to go in and visit.
Yeah.
You just wait for updates from other family members who are obviously, you know, hugely distressed. And Leo Varadkar talks about people who have to cocoon. I'm one of those people. I have an underlying immune disorder. Doesn't affect me at all, but it means you're compromised. I mean, I'm perfectly healthy, but just compromised in relation to this. But it means, I mean, people make it sound like you just stay away from people for 12 weeks, but it means that it's the last time I've seen people and got an opportunity to touch them. And I don't worry about myself. I'm isolated. But what about, is there something happening to all of those people belong to me out there who
And the three relatives that are in ICU at the moment, what age group are they, can I ask, Amanda?
That's the real worrying piece. I mean, the narrative around this is that 80% are fine, and it's only elderly people, but they're not elderly. They're 40s to 50s, no underlying health conditions. And I think it's very difficult for people to appreciate something when it doesn't touch them.
Yeah.
When you're talking about statistics and numbers and curves, and even when you look at Italy and Spain, there are other people over there. But we're a small country.
Yeah.
We have big families. And we're all going to be sitting down. We have the potential to be sitting down in a couple of weeks. And when they're talking about numbers in ICU and numbers of people who've died, we will all know one of them.
Yeah.
And
Amanda, if it's not too difficult, what was the time frame, insofar as you know it, of your three relatives?
This was days. This was literally, this was very, very quick. I mean, I'm very, very conscious of talking about other people.
And
but I can't stress enough, you do not want this to touch your family.
Yeah.
You really, really don't. And all the talk about ICU beds and ventilators, that will mean nothing. It's the length of time people are on a bed and on a ventilator.
Yeah.
Once they're occupied, the question you have to ask is what happens to the queue behind them? You know what I mean? I don't like people who, you know, sensationalize and, you know.
But my God, you haven't definitely, you've hit the solar plexus of the national psychology with that description.
But I mean,
three relatives, all 40s and 50s, no underlying medical conditions.
Not that we're aware of.
Okay, they weren't in hospital when it struck them.
I wouldn't have thought so.
Yeah. Okay. And all three of them are on ventilators and sedation or whatever at the moment.
Well, I know two are
in the ICU. Yeah.
Yes, and as I said, I'm very conscious of them.
Yeah. Okay, I understand that. So,
but I can't stress enough this. You know, this. We're not a big country. There's more people in Lombardy, you know. I mean, and we're all stuck in our houses. We're watching stuff on the television. We hear about it, but it won't be anonymous. You know, the irony of it is, the only way we have to keep this at a distance is to literally stay in from people, or it will be in under our roofs. We will be the people who can't go out when something dreadful has happened. I'm here, and maybe when you're on your own, I'm just so terrified for people. I think, please don't have this come down on top of you.
Do your absolute utmost, yeah.
Because it is, I mean, that's all they keep saying. It is in our hands, and it really, really is. Just a small thing of staying in. It's not a big ask. You know, we're all very spoiled. It's only when you don't have the life you normally have that you realise.
Amanda, it's
but it's just
your message is so powerful, and I know you are distressed, but your distress your distress is affecting people, and that I think it's anyone that was anyway complacent up to this will not just hear your message, but hear your evidence, and that three relatives are of a young age with no underlying are in intensive care because of
this.
We're
all connected in this, whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
We don't want to be here in 12 months saying, you know, what if?
Yeah.
You know, we really don't.
Okay, Amanda, please, God, and great medical help, and the seriousness of it is definitely not underestimated by our politicians and our medics and most people in the country at this stage.
But you know what, we're all the same, Joe. You never think anything is going to happen to you.
I think you're dead right. Yeah,
look,
yeah,
I've run out and ran across roads. You know, you do stupid things. You think you're never the
forget.
One.
Yeah.
But But viruses, they don't distinguish.
They don't distinguish,
you know?
No.
And we never know if we're in the 80% or the 20%. Act like you're in the 20%. That's what I'd say to everybody.
And this is an evil, evil virus that has visited us and is on the rampage around the world. It's hard to even think that 2 months ago we'd be ever even saying that combination of words, but that's what's happened.
I know.
Amanda, can you phone someone now in a few minutes? And I know you're on your own from what you say. But
I'm fine.
Okay.
I'm fine. Thank you very much.
And you're very powerful, and kind regards to your relatives, and hope they make a full and speedy recovery.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Amanda. 51551, wash your hands.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715
And obviously things are moving pretty quickly, but just on that story we were doing yesterday about the COVID-19 payment and anomalies which were pointed out, which there are anomalies in it, but that's, I don't think anyone is to blame at this stage because everything is moving so quickly. The Department of Social Protection were in touch to say that the issue raised at the programme yesterday, that they've worked out that the husband of the caller will get €422 instead of the 391 as Anne had thought he was getting. But it's a difficult time, and thanks to Social Protection for that. Where's Peter Hale? Peter, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
How are you doing? What's your situation, Peter?
Well, the situation now is I'm finding it very difficult after that last phone call to talk to you about an issue. Yeah. You know, I can resonate completely because I live in the grounds of a residential care home here in Rostrum, in a lovely little mews. And, you know, I saw the parents last Sunday, Mother's Day, and children looking through the windows at their grandmums and granddads. And it was so sad to see it, you know, but it's just happened. The reason why I'm phoning is, Joe, I live alone. I'm on what's called a live alone allowance, etc.
Okay.
As you're aware, every winter we do have what's called a winter fuel allowance.
Oh, yeah.
And that runs from October to next week.
Oh, next week, okay.
Next week, right. So I think it's the third, and so on. And it's 24 quid, but the problem I have, Joe, is that, you know, we are on lockdown here for 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. We tend to follow the guidelines of the hospital, but we're not under their jurisdiction, if you understand.
Okay, that's interesting.
We tend to follow them. We tend to take their guidelines.
And so you're saying, would the government reconsider extending the fuel because so many people are at home? Yeah.
Look, 2 years ago they did it when the weather was on.
Right? Yeah.
Just even a couple of weeks further on, because it is costing us more money staying at home.
We're not
sneaking off to the kids.
I know. Peter, how do you survive financially?
Perfectly. On the pension, I'm on a normal pension, and I don't have a problem. I have my own little life, and I'm within my means. Okay, my little savings part is not much. Yeah. Well, that's when we try and sneak out and get the free meal somewhere. You know what I mean?
No.
I have to say now, brilliant. Absolutely. I have no complaints whatsoever on that front. As I say, I'm in the grounds of the hospital here. It's marvellous. Can I give the hospital a plug?
Of course you can. Yeah.
St. Coleman's Residential Care Centre in Rostrum.
Okay.
They are light years ahead of us.
And do you live alone, Peter?
I live alone. We have 12 little houses, on the grounds. I'm looking out the window now, Joe, at two pheasants, ducks, geese. Right, we have a little farm here as well.
Oh.
And we're totally self-sufficient on our own grounds.
And where are you from originally, Peter?
Originally Temple Oak. My family are English, so that sounds amazing. Temple Oak, man.
You have a powerful voice, yeah. And I see you're in your mid-70s.
I'm 72.
Okay.
72 and thriving, thank God. You know?
And what is your reflection on getting through this awful time, as we've heard articulated so strongly and powerfully today?
All right. Well, can I be frank, Joe? I live in an environment of passings. When you live in a residential care home, we're over there in the day centre most days, right? Mm. So we're used to people passing. It's just part and parcel of the package.
People dying,
right? So it hardens you a little bit. I mean, when I first came down here, I didn't know the names of people.
Okay.
You know, if someone said, Joe Bloggs passed away last night, I'd have to sneak in and ask the nurse, can you show me a picture off the file? But now, Joe, after 5 years...
But how do you wake up in the morning and feel so strong about going forward? Briefly, I'm way over time.
Myself, Through a routine.
Okay, stick to your routine. You know? Okay.
I do routines in the hospital. I do notice boards in the hospital.
Well done,
I busy myself.
And you give and you give and you give by the sounds of it.
Peter, nice.
Yeah, Peter, thanks indeed. Look after yourself and we'll keep in touch. No, but hopefully we'll hear it now that you've raised it so powerfully. Thanks.
Very good.
Thanks indeed, Peter Hale. Pat O'Carney was in sound. Broadcast coordinator was Doc Martin. Produced today by Annette Egan. Rebecca Mean is the series producer. Richie Byrne is the researcher. A special mention to Lisa Marie Berry, Tara Lockery-Grant, Angus McAnally, Laura Lee Davis and Fergus Sweeney, who are all working from home. Back Monday, 1:45. Stay well. And Ray Darcy is next.